You have tuned in to episode 4 of Sound Science on DubLab Radio with me, your host, Dr. Yuando Pierce. On this show, I talk about science and music with the help of those in the know from both worlds while playing an eclectic mix of tunes to get you ready for your Monday. So let's start the show off by playing this tune by Art Barkley and the African Ensemble. This is Abirin African, African Woman. Is all about the science of rhythm. In the first part of the show, I'll be unpacking the concepts of rhythm and talking about how the brain perceives and responds to rhythmic sounds. My first guest on the show will be my dear friend Heidi Prendergast, who is a dancer, choreographer, and teacher, and who will be helping me understand how the body responds to rhythm. I'll then be trying to get to the bottom of why our ability to move in time with music varies, and why, regardless of how well you can move, music, and specifically drum music, can actually help with a number of illnesses and improve well-being. Then in the second part of the show, I will be talking to two incredible drummers, Paulie the PSM and Pegasus Warning, about their drumming practice. But first, have a listen to this and see if you can keep up.
Not too fast, not too fast now. That's right. Now keep it up, keep it up. I'll give you some direction. Group one, group two, group three. Keep it up, keep it up. Keep one, keep it up, keep it up. Group two. Group three, coming up. Group three. Ha, 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 ha. Listen to yourself. Keep it up, keep it up.
Clip from arts educator Connell Coley's TEDx talk back in October 2015 entitled Drumming and the Brain, which we'll come back to a bit later. What is rhythm and how does it relate to the brain? So one definition of rhythm is that it is a strong, regular, repeated pattern of movement or sound and incorporates beat, meter, tempo and syncopation. Along with melody and harmony, rhythm is an essential component of music, differentiating it from just sound. Rhythm can also refer to coordinating your movement with something that you hear. So how do we hear? Sound is captured by the fleshy part of the ear and funneled down into the auditory canal to the eardrum. This sets off a vibrational domino effect. The vibration of the eardrum causes three little bones called the malleus, incus, and stapes to vibrate, which in turn causes a structure called the oval window to vibrate. Because the oval window is attached to a structure called the cochlea, it too will vibrate. The cochlea is made up of a top membrane and a bottom membrane, along which are small tiny hairs. Now the cochlea contains a fluid which gets pushed all the way around the cochlea in response to the vibration. As the fluid flows around the cochlea, it pushes up on the top membrane and down on the bottom membrane, causing the hairs to move back and forth. When this happens, an electrical signal is generated, which travels via the auditory nerve to a part of the brain called the auditory cortex, and this is how the brain perceives sound. Neuroimaging studies have revealed that music, once perceived in the auditory cortex, induces widespread activation of various networks across several structures in the brain. You can have a closer look at the key areas associated with music processing on www.soundsciencepodcast.com under episode 4 of the episode tab. But here I'm just going to concentrate on how humans entrain the mind and body to incoming rhythmic sensory inputs. In other words, how we find the beat. Most people can recognise and reproduce a large number of rhythms and move in synchrony to a beat by rhythmically timed movements of different body parts, such as tapping a finger or a foot, or swaying the body from side to side. This special cognitive ability allows us to dance and play music in a group. Extracting a beat structure from a musical rhythm, also known as beat perception, together with synchronization, is a robust, ubiquitous, and intuitive behavior that develops from an early age. Recent scientific data has revealed which specific brain areas and neuronal circuits are involved in the process. And it turns out that in order to move in time to a musical rhythm, the brain must extract the regularity in the incoming temporal information and predict when the next beat will be. Functional MRI studies suggest that predictive timing involves interactions between the auditory cortex, which is where the brain perceives sound, and the motor cortex, which is involved in controlling the execution of movement. I feel like I can hear you saying, "What the hell is oscillatory behavior?" So let me explain. Rhythm isn't limited to music. Our bodies have their own natural rhythmic patterns called biorhythms. For example, the heart has an internal pacemaker that causes it to beat repetitively for our entire lives. Scientists believe that many biological functions like this are controlled by a natural internal oscillation pattern. This internal oscillator is thought to form the foundation of internal timekeeping mechanisms and allows us to track a beat. By adapting it, humans can synchronize rhythmic activities like pace of walking or dancing to a beat from incoming music. So one person I know who definitely does not have an issue with rhythm is my good friend Heidi, who works with movement. She is a dancer, a choreographer, and a teacher, and one of my favourite dancing partners. So I interviewed her about the body and rhythm. So Heidi, welcome to this month's episode of Sound Science. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're actually recording in your studio in Burbank, or in the studio that you teach at. Can you tell the audience a little bit about what you do in terms of, you know, your relationship with movement?
I am a dancer. I've been dancing much of my life, but training classically and traditionally, technically, since I was 14. I am a teacher. I teach movement, different forms to kids and adults, like probably ages 2 is my youngest student, up until, I don't know, my oldest student I think is 70 right now. So kind of a large range, but I work a lot with kind of kids and teenagers and that age range. I'm a choreographer also. I put together movement to tell stories and work.
Just because you might not mention it yourself, Heidi has just made this incredible film. Could you tell us a little bit about that quickly?
Yes. Okay, so I recently created a project that focused on facilitating light energy in your body and how to do that and what different people did to access that. I interviewed or worked with 5 different non-dancers and created this short series of movement films that sort of all dealt with the idea of lightness in a sort of abstract way, but came from a very specific place, and then in the creation became this other thing I'm talking with my hands, which I can't.
No, it's really, honestly, it's very good.
Is that a great description?
I'll put some details up on the website. So how did you get into dance? Classically trained? Did you study dance?
Yeah, so as a kid, like a young kid, I performed with my family a little bit, movement and singing, which is a whole other story, but that was sort of like the first introduction to like putting together movement and doing it in front of people. And then when I was 14, I started training, at first just in like, you know, I wanted to take like a dance class, and then very shortly after that, decided that it was something I was really interested in, and then started studying pretty seriously classical ballet, and then other stuff too, hip-hop a little bit, jazz a little bit, tap, but classical ballet was kind of the main thing from the time I was 14 till I was 18, like every day, because I started dancing late. So that was sort of my introduction to dance. I was a little bit older. It was a little bit different for me, but I think my brain had already developed in certain ways, so it was easier for me to understand some concepts. Anyway, specifically to rhythm is something I personally have always felt very natural for me. to hear music, to listen to rhythm, to dissect rhythms, and be able to, you know, sort of listen and hear different things that are going on in music, which is, you know, sometimes not that difficult to do. And sometimes is, but a lot of music is very simple.
For you, I've seen you move. It seems very natural to you. Do you remember when you were young, before you started trying just moving to music?
Sure. Like, I think there are definitely times where probably music was playing and it's always felt pretty natural for me to move around. I had a pretty unconventional childhood, so I wasn't always allowed to access all music that I wanted. As a teenager, sort of had to sneak listening to certain music if my dad didn't allow it. So that was always interesting because it kind of was like the things that I was drawn to were very... It was very natural because it wasn't really, we didn't really hear that much music at home. My dad did like some artists and he did let us listen to the artists that he liked, but he was very controlled, so, you know.
Right.
But I don't ever remember feeling, and I, to this day, like as a kid or as an adult, I don't ever remember feeling discomfort moving when music came on. It was always something that felt really natural, not something I had to put a lot of thought process into, just happened pretty innately. And with training in dance, I think it became more interesting to listen to music and then move, even in a non-classical sense, just like going out and dancing to music, because I could hear different things in music and then my body kind of would want to respond in different ways to different sound, which I sort of maybe was able to pay more attention to with dance training.
Because that's the aspect that I'm interested in. Some people are naturally good movers, or they find it easy to pay the rhythm and move to a beat. But with the training, so what you're saying is actually that helps you to hear more in the music that you can then respond to with your body.
I think for me, music and dance are really closely related. So it's not that one can't exist without the other. Like, of course there's music without movement, and of course there's movement in silence. But I think that they inspire each other. And I think as a group, they make a lot of, they're very whole. The two pieces together feel very whole to me. I don't know if dance training made me hear music differently or with a different kind of clarity because I was trying to express something, and learning how to play with music, I think, is a part of that. I think you learn, I don't know when I learned this, if it was like in a choreographic space or just as a performer, but I think you learn at a certain point that music can help you get your point across, or it can hinder you from getting your point across, especially when putting choreography together. So I think learning how to decipher what music enhances certain movements, or perhaps maybe not even movements, but like this music makes sense because it allows me to say what I'm trying to say with my body, even though I'm not using verbalized words. This music has the feeling or the energetic quality that I'm trying to present, so it maybe helps the audience understand. Or sometimes the opposite of that. Sometimes having really contrasting music can show the movement in a way that you wouldn't expect to see it because the music is so contrasting. So maybe like a smooth movement with like a very abrupt music can be like almost the movement feels more calming because everything around it is so abrupt.
As a choreographer, the rhythm is something that you can play with.
Yeah, I think actually often it works really well to play with the rhythm sometimes, and then sometimes to not play with it at all or to not have rhythm. You know, when you're out and you're social dancing, I think dancing with rhythm is always going to get you the furthest. Like, it's always going to be the best. You're always going to feel the best. It's always going to kind of put you into that trance-like state of like being able to kind of move and groove and have the music kind of move with you, like become a whole piece, you and the music moving. But in choreography, when you're trying to kind of create a work, I actually think sometimes doing too much with the music layered completely the same as the dance becomes really monotonous for the audience.
Right, yeah.
So kind of using sound or rhythm to play with when you do, that way when it does sync up, the movement and the music, it has a more, it's more impactful.
I want to shift now to sort of your teaching.
Okay.
The range of people that you teach, you said from age
two or four, yeah.
Two or
I mean,
four
mostly older than two, but I do have one or two students.
There'll be some who are naturally
naturally have a lot of rhythm, and some to whom it doesn't come as naturally.
Yeah.
Is rhythm something that you can teach?
I want to say yes, but I want to say that it's, if it's not innate to you, like if it's not something that you hear naturally, okay, not something that you can physically represent naturally, because you might have to learn to put it in your body. But if it's something that your ear cannot hear, that I'm not sure. Can you teach rhythm if someone can't hear where the rhythm is? Like if they can't clap on the beat, can you teach them? I'm not sure. Have I had students who really struggled with rhythm? Yes. And dance is often, I mean, especially in teaching dance, like you're using pretty simplistic rhythm patterns. You're not really going into much polyrhythm. You're really using a really simple structure. So I find that most kids or people can sort of follow a simple downbeat on like a really basic rhythm, like a 4-4, which is like basically just like boom, boom, boom. Just like really, it's simple, you know, it's 4 counts, it's 8 counts, and that, I find that most people can hear that. Now, can they put it in their body? Not always. And can you teach them that? Yes. If they can hear it. If they can't hear it, then that's a different thing. It's like with singing, they say like, if you can't hear that you're off key, you probably can't fix it. But if you can hear it, you probably can hear that you're off. And then maybe eventually with the right muscular training, you can fix it. So I would say it's similar with dance. Like if you can hear the beat, I think you could eventually learn how to present it in your body.
So with choreography, where you've learned a particular sequence of movement, that's one skill. But obviously people have their own way of moving. And when I see you dance, for example, you obviously a trained dancer, but there is an essence that comes with that, which is natural. Like you just naturally can move to a beat. Well, So in a classroom where you have everyone to learn the choreography, do you see variation in terms of the like extra layer on top, like the extra rhythm?
Sure, there are some students who have like an innate quality. I mean, I don't know if it's rhythm or if it's quality of movement where the rhythm settles in your body in a way that it's more clear to the eye, the external eye.
Mm-hmm.
Because do the kids that just kind of look a little dorky and awkward but are still on the beat but it's not in their body, do they feel it in the same way? Is it anxious? Are they, sometimes when I watch dancers like that, I feel anxious because I'm not sure if it's going to happen on the beat. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's what being off the beat does for a viewer, is it makes them kind of like, it puts them off a bit. Like it makes them unsettled because it's not so clear. But then obviously there are some dancers who have just a really natural movement quality and rhythm sits in their body in a way, or it sits in their torso in a way where it's like, it's not just in the feet. It's not just in the hip or wherever you're trying to put it, but it's in the whole body. Those students are the ones that become professionals or are more on the route to that because it's more innate in them, I believe.
Heidi and I go dancing. She's my favorite dancer. Oh, no. Sorry, other friends. Heidi's one of my favorite dance partners, but we go out and we dance. Generally, do you think that there is an overall genre of music that you find easier to move to? And then I'm going to ask you which genres
are not easy. I mean, what I'm most regularly drawn to, just as a person, just as Heidi, outside of dancer, is R&B music. So I tend to listen to that a lot, and personally, I tend to dance to that a lot. I don't use it that much in teaching because it's slow and it's romantic. Well, not all of it nowadays. It used to be romantic. And sometimes that's, you know, like a fine line. You have to be, when you work with kids, you have to think about topics, themes, and things like this. But I find that to be very kind of natural for my body to move in this kind of circular and soft. I love house music that has like a heavy bass drum and like vocals. Love. Sometimes to really move out a lot of energy, some like really trappy hip hop music is great, just to like really move energy around.
Absolutely, I agree. I find that there's a particular genre that is, aside from Heidi and what Heidi likes to move to, that is just technically easier to for everyone.
I think most pop music. think most pop music, which is like if you go to like a dance class at your gym or, you know, like a yoga class where they're playing, you know, popular top 40 music. I think honestly, if you listen to most top 40 stuff, that kind of music, again, because it's a really simple rhythmic structure, tends to be easy to move to because it's the same beat over and over. It's not hard to hear, and it's usually has a heavy downbeat, so you can hear that, and it's easy to hear that and move on that. So I think for simplistic reasons, pop music is probably the easiest.
And is there a genre that you find, I mean, jazz in terms of rhythm?
Jazz is hard, but really fun to improv too.
Right.
For me, because it gives you so many different rhythms to play within, and it kind of moves through different sounds, which for me is like, okay, this inspires me to do this, as opposed to something that's super repetitive after a while. I think, okay, I think I've done all the movements that I can think that right. This music brings me. So jazz, I would say, is probably pretty hard to create structured choreography to, okay? Or like a combo or a phrase that's easy to follow along. It's usually very polyrhythmic. Some classical music changes in the middle often, or there'll be like sounds that come in and out, and it's harder to follow. It's not such a simple rhythmic pattern. I don't know. I love dancing to kind of abstract sound, even though obviously that doesn't give you much impulse. I think maybe that's what I like about it, is it kind of gives you a lot of space, but it gives you a little bit of some kind of quality without it being just empty air.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you'll get a note or a little rhythmic pattern that will come in and out. So I sort of like sort of ambient abstract sounds sometimes, but I think it would be hard to like be like, okay, and you're on this sound, you're gonna do this. So it's like, well, how do I get to that sound? How do I know when that sound is coming? I'm personally not that inspired to move around to like really heavy rock, punk, no offense. Just because my personal body doesn't tend to need to move that way, but I could see how for certain people that kind of energy of this very like kind of like up and down, like almost jumpy feeling could feel really amazing, and you would just do that over and over and you would eventually be like hypnotized or something by that. Like, so I can understand how like some people are really driven by that, but personally that does not drive me to move. Like I can handle that for about 10 minutes and I'm like, I'm out. Cause it's very linear to me, and I really like more circular qualities. And you know, maybe I should play with that and try to make circles to that too, but you know, not right there yet.
Thank you so much for breaking that down for me and helping us to understand a little bit more about movement in relation to rhythm. That was super interesting.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so cute.
It was an absolute pleasure having you. okay, so that's it for our interview. But thank you again for being my guest in Sound Science. A pleasure.
Thank you.
The expression to march to the beat of your own drum usually refers to doing something or acting or behaving in a manner that does not conform to the standard, prevalent or popular societal norm. But for some people, they literally do move to the beat of their own drum. You know the ones, you've seen them on the dance floor. They seem to be moving to music that only they can hear in their heads. You might actually think this describes you. But the truth is that the majority of humans are able to clap, dance, march in unison with few problems. Although how well we're perceived to do this does vary, there is a small percentage of the population who genuinely have difficulty in being able to dance to a beat. These people are described as having beat deafness, and it's a real disorder. Back in 2014, a group from McGill University published a paper which shed light on why this happens in some individuals. Truly beat deaf people have a very, very difficult time clapping or tapping to an auditory beat or swaying to one. It's a problem that is far more severe than just lacking coordination or not being very graceful. Here's a clip of Caroline Palmer, lead author on the paper, speaking about the research. This is taken from a video posted on YouTube by McGill University.
I'm Carolyn Palmer. I'm a professor in psychology at McGill, and I'm working with our collaborators at University of Montreal, Isabel Peretz and Pascal Ligi. Beat deafness is a pretty rare disorder. It's a problem in which people have a tough time either tapping or clapping or moving their head to some regular pattern. Beat deaf individuals have an especially hard time adapting to changes in sound. So we present them in the lab with examples of sounds that change. We present them with a metronome, and it's changing in an unpredictable way, and their job is to tap along with it. So you'll hear an example of one of the trials by the beat deaf individuals. The high-pitched tone is the metronome, which will change its rate unpredictably. The low-pitched tone is their response. We're not sure why some people have difficulty hearing or moving to a beat, while most people don't have any difficulty. It doesn't seem to be something that's conscious. It seems to be something that is a reaction to engagement with sound. So our hypothesis was that beat deaf individuals may have different biological rhythms than people who don't have difficulty tracking a beat. Next up is to understand the types of behaviors or the types of experiences that distinguish beat deaf people from people who don't have trouble finding a beat. So maybe it's not limited to sound. Maybe there are patterns of visual cues with which beat deaf people look different from other people. Once we understand the variety of behaviors that differentiate these individuals, we can have a better handle on how much the biological rhythms are driving our behavior.
Regardless of how well you can dance, music is undeniably good for you, and not just in terms of lifting your mood. Music-based interventions have proven beneficial in stroke and dementia, as well as Parkinson's disease and epilepsy. While positive improvements have been reported for anxiety and depression following group drumming interventions specifically. Here is Cornel Coley again from the TEDx stage.
For thousands of years, people have been using drums and rhythm to heal. Currently, there's a lot of scientific evidence that proves the benefits of drumming for health reasons. There are two major claims for therapeutic drumming. One is that it alters the way the brain processes information. Two is that it boosts your immune system. The science of it is that it activates the killer T cells, the white blood cells that the body generates to fight virus and disease, documented by Dr. Barry Bittman of Health Rhythms. The other things about the brain is we work on brain waves. We live in a beta brain world where we're working fast, we're active, we're getting things done, we're multitasking. But the downside is that it makes us susceptible to feelings of anger, fear, and worry. We need balance, and we seek it. That comes with the alpha, the next lower brain wave state, a little slower. It is associated with feelings of calm, tranquility. Drumming doubles the presence of the alpha brain waves, documented by Dr. Barry Quinn. More about the brain is that we have those two hemispheres, which everybody knows, the logical left, the creative right, and when they're pulsating harmoniously through drumming and being exposed to drums as well as playing, the thinking and the feeling is more integrated, so your thinking is improved and therefore your behavior. Neurons fire usually in rhythm. They're like rhythmic cues for thought and action, but they can be broken and even destroyed by disease, by trauma, by illness. And drumming and the sound of drumming and the continuous involvement with rhythm and drumming by a skilled leader can repair these connections. So people have suffered from stroke particularly or Parkinson's disease, these debilitating neurological illnesses, benefit greatly when their treatment involves rhythm and drumming.
Right, so I went down a little rabbit hole when reading papers for this episode. I don't have enough time to go deep, and these findings don't really fit anywhere, so I'm going to go ahead and create a nice little segment called Fun Facts about some interesting things that I dug up, and I might make this a regular feature for future shows. So, first paper, entitled Optimal Tempo for Groove, Its Relation to Directions of Body Movement and Japanese Nori. This was published in Frontiers in Psychology last year and revealed that there is optimum tempo for groove. That's the feeling that induces body movement. And they found that this existed for drum breaks at 100 to 120 BPM. A Another nice paper that I stumbled across was entitled One in the Dance, Musical Correlates of Group Synchrony in Real World Club Environment, published in PLOS ONE in 2016. So last month I talked about the science of sleep and rave culture. So this is of particular interest to me because I feel like that euphoric feeling that you have when you are with a group of people dancing and enjoying the music is nothing short of magical. Well, this paper looked into what it is that creates that cohesion. So in the study, group synchrony of movement was recorded over time during a music set at a club and showed that the greatest group synchrony based on back and forth torso movements was achieved during, wait for it, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go by Wham! And You Can't Hurry Love by The Supremes and Black or White by Michael Jackson. While YMCA by The Village People, The Freak by Chic and Car Wash by Rose Royce resulted in the least group synchronization. So during the set, group synchrony of torso movements was mostly associated with pulsations that approximate walking rhythm. So that's 100 to 150 BPM. And actually the three songs that resulted in the greatest group synchrony had the highest real-world play counts of all the songs that were played during the set. So taken together, that means that group synchrony is constrained to familiarity of movement and of music. Basically, knowing the song and doing a movement that everyone does. So before I describe the final paper that I read, a quick disclaimer. The next couple of minutes includes descriptions of a sexual nature. Okay, so this paper is very strange. It's titled Sexual Arousal and Rhythmic Synchronization, a Possible Effect of Vasopressin, and it was published a few years ago. So this paper suggests that there's a link between music and sexual selection. So vasopressin is a hormone that acts on a part of the brain which is involved in rhythmic perception and production, and that part of the brain is called the basal ganglia. The thing about vasopressin is it is found at a higher concentration in males and rises during sexual arousal. So this is specific to men, not so much in women. So as part of a pilot study on just one male subject, these scientists asked this man to carry out self-manual penile stimulation until sexual arousal was reached, as they describe it. Then he was asked to tap with his dominant finger over a metronome. Once he finished the task, he was then asked to continue self-manual penile stimulation until ejaculation occurred. Oh, to be a research assistant on this study. Then after a 3-minute rest period, he was asked to repeat the task. So after all that trouble, they actually didn't see any differences between the first and the second task, meaning that whether he ejaculated or not, sexual arousal full stop led to a high concentration of vasopressin in the basal ganglia and facilitated better synchronization, at least for this one man. Which I'm interpreting to mean that if a guy is sexually aroused, he will transform into a better dancer, perhaps. So I hope I've given you some fun facts for the next dinner that you go to. And now for the next half of the show, talking about drumming and rhythm with two incredible drummers who I had the pleasure to interview, Pegasus Warning and Paulie the PSM. Stay locked. So changing gears now, I want to talk about our ability as humans to create rhythm. When I was 8, I started learning the piano, but even after years of practice, I never got good at it. When I was 16, I started playing the drums, and after just a few months, was playing at grade 6 level. Now, unfortunately, I stopped in my early 20s and never became the world's most respected drummer, but I like to think that I do still have it, and it was something that I think came quite naturally to me. Now, obviously, I'm far from professional, but I do know someone who is. I spoke to Pegasus Warning about his drumming practice to get an insight into what it's like to get there. welcome to Sound Science. This month we are talking about the science of rhythm, and you are, of course, also known as Pegasus Warning.
Yes.
And I'm delighted to have you on the show.
I'm so happy.
We're talking about drumming in this particular capacity, but you actually play a number of different instruments. You're a vocalist,
sure.
Writer, producer,
yes.
Percussionist.
Right.
So drums is just one thing that you can do. And actually what I'm really interested in sort of speaking to you about is how you came to play the drums and how, I guess, if you're learning on your own, how learning the drums and sort of that kind of developing rhythm that way changes when you then, you know, play with others. Like, how has that been for you?
Okay, so I started, I think, playing drums because my grandfather was a drummer. That was the main entry point, and then that combined with my mother's influence, she's an ethnomusicologist, I think those two things combined created my more focus on the drums.
How old are you? I guess
three, four, five. Like
your whole
very
life.
Young, yeah. So that was the moment that I can remember playing drums from West Africa with my grandfather. You know, but he was coming from American jazz technique, so we ended up playing brushes on these drums that weren't the American drum set. So I already started with a kind of like hybrid identity of what belongs with what was already kind of hybridized as I was going into it. So it's just from the beginning, it was a mixed approach, and that has stayed with me since that point.
Do you remember being, because you were quite young, do you remember it coming naturally to you?
Yes. I've been told that I was dancing to, like, faucet dripping. The rhythm of the faucet dripping. So just, there was no blockade to it. Yeah, my grandmother was the only one. This was more later on, I think. She more encouraged the piano because she saw it as more of a job possibility. But always supportive, always full support of my parents. Yeah, my whole family continues to support me and what I do in music. And that's the thing, is to have that support.
So you had piano lessons, then you started to learn drum music. And
the drum music, I didn't start learning and reading until probably fourth grade. The thing about it is, it's like the mechanics of it are so important. There's specific ways that you need to hold your hands to execute dynamics in the instrument. I guess like with any instrument, but with something that's so visceral and clearly the early human expression of music and art, it seems kind of counterintuitive, right? But in contemporary music or drumming or the contemporary expression of this very old human tradition, whether it's voice or drums, there's techniques because the instrument, the tools to express this very human need to hit things and make a sound has developed. So the drum has so many parts. You want to be able to express the greatest level of dynamics that you'd like to. So the technique is important. I get that. And that can sometimes, if you don't have the right teacher or the right guidance or the right whatever, it can dissuade you and discourage you from continuing on.
So you just play that incredible, I want to call it a piece? Improvisation?
Idea.
So that could be written as drum music.
Sure.
How do you feel the rhythm changes if you were to read that?
So this idea of notated composition versus improvised composition, and improvised composition is just a faster form of composition than notated composition.
Got it.
It's just more immediate. I'm still composing. It still can be expressed with notation, but because I'm not only a composer and I'm also a performer and improviser, I just do it faster.
So yeah, so it's just faster and without the pen and paper.
Yeah.
Do you find that you have rhythm, you'll go to like a default sort of rhythm? I remember when I played, I would always go for the dun 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 dun. I would always fall like when I was just improvising, playing around, I'd always go there. So there are rhythms that you're more like particular styles, like jazz, or, you know,
there's things that I'm more comfortable with. Yeah. And there's things that I gravitate toward. I'm not sure why. Like I have mentors and older musicians that I used to play with that would, in jazz, that would say that's a bag, or like there she is falling into that bag again, or there he is, he's in that bag. And a bag is bad.
It's bad.
A bag is you're falling into the pattern of your own tricks and you're not progressing and you're not creating. We've heard you do that before. We're bored now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a read. It's a very strong read.
That's an ouch. That's
Yeah. There he goes into that bag, and it could be anything. You're leaning on some well-trodden path.
Yeah, it's a crutch, right?
Yes.
Do you find that because you started learning so young, are some of those things related to the first rhythms that you learn, or are they completely...
I don't think so.
No.
When I got the drum set, 8, 9, 10, something like that, mm-hmm. somewhere in there. Yes, when I got the drum set, now the rhythms I play are related to that, absolutely, because I was just talking about this last night, but Bon Jovi's... Slippery When Wet was one of the first records that I could play from front to back.
Oh, really?
On the drums, and that's, it's still well in me. Yeah.
Can you play a little? a little extra, or an edit of it. Ones you always try, and whenever someone jumps on some drums, they always try.
Yeah.
Go to the music that they know. So, one of the last questions I was thinking about is really,
because
there's so much potential here in this drum kit. What element of the rhythm has been most challenging for you?
Sometimes I hear other drummers play. And I wonder why so many notes in a fill.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then it becomes... And then I question myself. Am I questioning myself? Am I questioning that style because I don't practice that style?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I couldn't achieve that style, but it's just not my stylistic choice. So it's very difficult because there's some things that I don't play because I don't want to, but am I closing off a door to my development? Yes, probably. Is now the moment to question that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
It's not really necessary.
No.
At this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah. I mean, that's maybe something in old age or just like, oh, maybe I'll try that. But I mean, especially now, in the YouTube and Instagram era where you can check out so many different styles mm-hmm. up close.
Mm.
Never before were you able to see that. You have more choice of what you want to do or what you don't want to do. Sometimes just standard,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder why that standard exists. It's almost like a military standard.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Or a sports standard, mm-hmm. Competitive standard, and I'm just like, I don't want to go anywhere near that bar. Yeah. That bar has nothing to do with what anything that I want to, you know. And it's the way things are tuned and the way drums sound, and I'm just like, whoa, not my cup of tea particularly.
Yeah, you want to be more a lot of your, you know, you use a lot. You go to lots of different genres in your music.
Yeah,
you're not limited.
Versatility
exactly. Versatility.
Yeah, that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And I don't feel no blockades to what I'm trying to do. Now, yeah. If there were some technical issues to something that I was trying to create at the drums or at the voice, maybe voices met better, then I would address it, you know? I can't do that. Okay, well, then you slow it down or you find another ears and eyes to help you through it, or you watch YouTube videos, and, you know, just like, oh, I want to do that, or, you know, I feel very blessed to have my own vision behind mm-hmm. the drum set and mm-hmm. just musically, and I feel very, usually, very strong in that, you know, so.
I liked when we were chatting before, I liked what you said about there being just a continuum between all your instruments. So I was going to ask you, has your piano informed your drumming? For you, it sounds like it's just your vocals and the percussion and everything is just one.
It's just flow. All one thing. It's, yeah, like I said before, I don't differentiate between the sound of a drum and the sound of a piano or voice. It's just all the same, and I try to translate that idea into my music.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like that to be messages underneath the layers there in one of the lessons.
Yeah, rather. And you can tell from I've listened to your music, that's definitely something that stands out to me.
Oh, good.
In fact, for our listeners who aren't aware, can you give us a little update on...
Oh, new stuff?
New stuff.
Oh, thanks for asking.
Anything upcoming?
Yeah, the new music is very much afoot, and it is on the way. Mm-hmm. Things are coming out next year, 2019. Probably by June, I'll have new music out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. It can't be stopped.
Good.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff. I just have to figure out the right way to release it into the
of course, present yeah. When you have so much, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and of course it has to have some sort of vision
mm-hmm.
Expressed through visuals. So, I gotta work so much on the music and the sound, and now it's time to kind of work on the how it looks and I want it to feel to people besides the sounds of music, as I still like put some finishing touches on some songs and try to sneak in some new material in there just as I go, because it's going to be fun when it's released and I get a chance to play it out and let people hear it, and I'm excited.
That's exciting. So after June you'll be doing live.
Yeah, I'll probably be doing stuff leading up to that. Okay, there's a residency here in LA that I'll probably be doing at some point very soon, maybe February or March. And,
awesome. Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much
for
being my guest.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was great to chat.
Cool.
Thanks.
So my next guest is an old friend of mine, Paulie the PSM, or just Paulie. In this interview, we talked about his career as a drummer, which is pretty incredible, and he was kind enough to share with me 3 drum solos which have really influenced his drumming practice. So let's jump straight into it. Enjoy. Paulie, welcome to Sound Science. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show. So this month we're exploring the science of rhythm, which I know you know a thing or two about. So when we first met, you had been appointed as music director for the MOBO Awards a year prior and was playing drums for Gorillaz and then on the African Express Tour, which are projects both created by Blur's frontman Damon Albarn. So it's now 2018. Can you fill us in on what you've been up to since then? I know, for example, you debuted your first live show as a solo artist at Paris Fashion Week last year. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me on the show. It's truly an honour. I guess since then, I've just been playing drums with different people, most recently Sanfar. I worked with him in the studio, and on his last two tours we did like a European and Australian tour, and then this year we just did like a festival tour, which is really fun. And then since then, most recently, I've been working on a solo music project.
Amazing, you've been really busy. And I mean, this all started back in, so as far as I know, you won the UK Young Drummer of the Year award in 2005 and ended up playing on Blue Peter, which of course is a British institution and beacon of childhoods across the nation. So how old were you when you won that award?
I think 16 when I won it.
So you were 16 at the time.
I won't
go. We won't give anything away. But so you were 16 then. How long had you been playing before then? And how did you pick up playing the drums?
Probably started when I was around 11 at secondary school. My first instrument was clarinet, and I was playing that in primary school. But then when I got to secondary school, all the kids, basically, I went to a school where they gave us an option of what instrument we wanted to play, and everyone was like, I want to play a cool instrument, and clarinet wasn't a cool instrument, so I kind of wanted to be like a cool kid, and all the cool kids were playing guitar or drums, and yeah, I kind of went down the drumming route, and I guess like a huge inspiration for me around that time was seeing my cousin play drums as well. He was like an awesome session drummer, and I used to play a lot, just like in the community and in different bands and stuff. So yeah, that is my inspiration, and being at school and being forced into playing instruments, those are like the two categories for me being a drummer.
I see, and did you find that playing the drums came naturally to you? Is it something that you picked up and sort of just had a feel for?
I'm not too sure. I think it was an escape for me, so I enjoyed kind of locking myself away and like transporting through playing drums, especially at that age as well. Like, I didn't really have any other extracurricular stuff that was going on, and I think when you're playing drums you can really get into the groove. You really like lose yourself in the music, and yeah, I think I just used to really enjoy doing that. Every day after school, I just go home and lock myself away. So I don't know if it was a natural thing, or if it was something I just worked really hard at. It never felt like work. I just always just did it a lot.
And you just really enjoyed it, which I guess is a really strong motivator for becoming good at something when you enjoy it, because I guess you want to be better. I mean, the drums to me always have felt like the most rhythmic instrument. Would you agree with that? And I mean, how would you define rhythm in that case?
Yeah, I guess any instrument can be rhythmic. And rhythm, I guess rhythm isn't defined by sound. Rhythm can be the way that something is processed through movement, or like even someone could be dancing in a rhythm. I guess it's like a repeated occurrence, or it's like a pattern, or just like a sequence. And I guess any instrument, like of it, can be rhythmic. Drums is definitely a rhythmic instrument. I guess the interesting thing about the drum kit that I play is that it's like the modern take on the drum kit. This drum kit, like with cymbals and snare drum and toms that you sit down behind, is really modern in the lineage and the story of drums, because originally drums were just individual instruments like bongos, if those come in pairs, but like in West Africa you see like a djembe,
mm-hmm.
That's like an individual drum that someone would have between their legs. You wouldn't really see all those drums around one person. I guess that's the interesting thing about what we do now with the drum kit or the drum set. It becomes this like communication tool where you play all these different instruments. It's not just one instrument, it's not just the drum. It's like the cymbals and toms and the kick drum. And it creates this, I guess, a cacophony of sound that can create rhythm. Well, it can be, what's the opposite of rhythm?
Unrhythmic. I mean, I think that's what I've always found interesting about drums, because they're not, it's not notes that you're playing. You're playing with percussion instruments that each make individual sounds. So it's how you hit the cymbal, I guess, or the kick drum. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. Because you can always tune drums as well, so you kind of have different notes or pitches that a drum can play.
I did not know that.
Yeah, because I guess the skin of a drum, if you tighten it, it's gonna become a higher pitch, and if you loosen it, it's gonna be a lower pitch. A good example of that is like a talking drum, like a West African talking drum, and by them squeezing it, it's higher, and by releasing it, it's lower, and that was one of the first forms of communication, and people would like communicate village to village via talking drum. So yeah, I guess you can have notes with drums, but it's probably as recognised as like a piano that would have a key and scales.
Yeah, right. And as you were saying, like the drums, what the modern kit is now is a number of different individual instruments that produce a cacophony of sounds. So thinking of the skills that you need to develop, obviously coordination is a really important part of that. So in terms of being a good drummer, are there skills which you, like your coordination, which you've had to really work at, or as you've sort of, you started at when you were at school, so which skills have you really had to hone versus which ones have you felt come a little bit more easily to you?
I think the most difficult thing has been unlearning the things that you're taught. Because anyone can learn stuff from an exercise book, but that's not what necessarily makes you great. I think it's having that individual flair, or having that, you know, just individual vibe, something that makes you more unique behind your instrument. And I guess unlearning everything that I learned at school and in my drum lessons is what's helped me to make me into the artist that I am now.
I see. Did you learn drum music when you learned at school? Like reading the drum music? I see. Yeah, because I mean...
Yeah.
You're, I think, watching you play in a very individual way, which is really striking. And there's definitely, as you were saying, rhythm is about the way you move your body, not just defined by sound. And I think that you bring rhythm both to the way that you're playing, but also the way that you move your body when you play. Would you say that rhythm is itself a teachable skill, or do you feel like rhythm is actually quite difficult to teach?
I don't think you can teach it in the, like, kinesic sense, maybe, but I think it's innate. Everyone has rhythm. Like, your heartbeat is a rhythm. And, you know, if you're alive, then you have rhythm, I guess. So I think it's just a matter of discovering your rhythm and maybe tuning in to your rhythm. You know, if you're walking, that has a rhythm. Dancing, that has a rhythm. So, you know, I think there's no right or wrong to rhythm. What was I saying? Things can be like the opposite of rhythm.
Yeah, I guess rhythmic. It sounds like what you're saying is... The rhythm is how it can be perceived. So I think some people would look at a particular, or hear particular sounds, or watch particular movement and find that the opposite of rhythmic. But actually, by definition, there are just lots of different rhythms, I guess.
Yeah, I think you can have like polyrhythms. You can have rhythms that cross over each other. I don't know. I think the key thing is that rhythm is innate. Everyone has rhythm. My favourite thing about rhythm, though, is how it's spelled. It's so random. I remember being at school and no one could spell rhythm.
I still can't spell rhythm. I have it written here.
And I remember my music teacher at the time Mrs. Meadows, she's awesome, and she told us this little rhyme that was not even a rhyme, it's just really hip young teacher has measles, and that's how you spell rhythm, R-H-Y-T-H.
Oh, that's a good one, because I don't think I can to this day spell rhythm without spell check.
Really hip young teacher has measles.
Now I know. Okay, so Paulie, I wanted to ask you about, so I learned the drums myself when I was at school. And someone who I found it quite interesting at the time was Ginger Baker of Cream. And I thought that he was quite an interesting drummer just because he was rock in terms of genre, but actually he started off as a jazz player and was influenced by African rhythms. And then, of course, like I love Tony Allen, and there are so many incredible drummers that each have their own style within different genres. Do you yourself play with mixing different rhythms, or do you prefer one style over another?
I guess the first thing is Ginger Baker's awesome. That's a big shout out. Have you seen a documentary?
I haven't seen it. Is it on?
You have to check it out. I think it's called like Beware of Mr. Barker or something like that. He's an interesting character. He's seems like quite a complex soul. Check out
that one out.
There's a drama though.
No, carry on as you were saying.
Yeah, there was this awesome drummer that he used to play with called Remy Kabakwa Senior.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like more a percussion player, I guess. I think he got a lot of his ideas from playing with him and a lot of the original Afrobeat drummers. Tony Allen, of course, the godfather of Afrobeat.
Absolutely.
Afrobeat as we know it. Velikuti, etc. So yeah, I think those are both excellent examples of drummers who have, I guess, this Tony Allen, he's invented his own thing, his own style of drumming based on, I guess, the roots of drumming in West Africa, Nigeria.
Yeah.
And with Ginger, using that jazz and kind of creating this blues slash rock thing. I think that's the best. Like, those are the best ways of doing something authentic. There's nothing new under the sun, but there's definitely a beauty in the merging of the different styles. I think one of my favourite drums is Mitch Mitchell, who played with Jimi Hendrix, and
Yeah, and I think it's quite obvious through your own of what I've heard of your drumming, you can tell that you have more than just like one particular influence, and it's more of a fusion of sort of different ways of approaching the drums. I think it's awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I've worked hard at just learning as much as possible from different drummers over the years, just watching, kind of absorbing different sounds, and eventually just it comes out when I'm performing.
Absolutely. Are there any genres that you just aren't really interested in exploring, like you wouldn't really touch?
I wouldn't touch. There's like a genre called mash rock.
Mash rock?
Mash rock, like mathematics.
Oh, okay.
Just all based on subdivisions and numbers. And I don't know if I'd be into that, because that feels more technical than musical, if that makes sense.
Yeah, got it. So that, dear listeners, is the end of the show. I hope that you are now feeling thoroughly stimulated on this Monday morning. For show notes, you can go to www.soundsciencepodcast.com. You can also listen back there on the DubLab archives. You can hit me up at soundsciencepodcast@gmail.com or at soundsciencepodcast on Instagram. If you have any questions or any ideas for future shows, I am more than happy to oblige. Share with me your ideas. So that's it, but I'm going to leave you now with this from Mr. Coley from his TEDx talk, which didn't really fit in anywhere else, but I thoroughly enjoyed. Enjoy the rest of the week. See you next month.
I work a lot with teenagers. I work with Black and Latino teenagers especially. My job is to teach Afro-Latin drumming and to teach community drum circles to facilitate the community drumming together. The kids and I focus on learning the Afro-Latin drumming feast to perform. And I work not only on the content, but on the process, the habits of mind. I want them to get transferable skills that they can take into the world. Things like seeking accuracy, drawing upon all your senses to get the information you need, modulating your impulses, very good for teenagers, right? And perseverance, sticking with it when things get tough. Right now we perform four rhythms right in a row, something like the Temptations' greatest hits. And they start with samba reggae from Brazil. And then we go to from merengue from Dominican Republic. Then we go to bomba from Puerto Rico. Bomba. And we ended up with Conga de Comparsa, the carnival music from Cuba. Boom.